Now, from the WMAL WinBet Studios, the Saturday Morning Update.
It is the Saturday Morning Update, and a Merry Christmas. It's hour two of the program this morning, and we are joined by John Gizzi. He is, of course, the White House correspondent, chief political columnist at Newsmax.com. Merry Christmas, John.
Merry Christmas, Rick, and a Happy New Year to all.
Well, I wish we had one of those on the radar screen, but I'm not so sure how happy things are going to be, at least for the first few months, with inflation and the spread of the Omicron variant and all of the other issues we're dealing with, high heating prices, high gasoline prices. And I want to start off with the beginning of the week, because Senator Joe Manchin launched a nuclear bomb at Build Back Better. He was on Fox News Sunday. When asked about voting for Build Back Better, he said, "I can't go there. This is a no." And, of course, that spread rapidly across the other talk shows on Sunday morning. Where do you see this going, and what's the White House saying?
Well, the White House is saying, in not so many words, that Joe Manchin is the Grinch who stole Christmas. This has been picked up widely, and denunciations at the West Virginian fly like shrapnel from the camp of the Progressive Caucus, the Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez wing of the Democratic Party. For its part, the White House still does not want to break off the relationship with Senator Manchin. According to Press Secretary Jen Psaki, the president still considers him a friend and refused to say that he did not negotiate in good faith. This means that there can be talks about some of the Build Back Better bill coming to life in the next session of Congress come January, but certainly not the whole costly package. The question is, without, say, climate change legislation, which would be an anathema to the mountaineer state Manchin represents, will the progressive wing decide to go along with a watered-down version or BBB light? This is going to be a high drama, and it's to be continued next year.
One note on Senator Manchin, John. He has not been exactly a favorite of the progressives, and some people have been attempting to woo him over to the Republican Party. Is that something he may do, or does he just kind of, you know, stand his ground against the progressives and stay right where he is?
Let's put it on the table. Senators Mitch McConnell, the Republican leader, and John Cornyn of Texas both publicly urged him to come on over. The White House said that Senator Manchin has addressed this before. Well, he's addressed it in the past, but not so much lately. I spoke to people in West Virginia about this, and sentiments are mixed. Lynn Statton, who is the vice chairman of the Republican Party of West Virginia, emeritus, said that she thinks he'll become an independent before he does anything else if he changes parties. Others who know the senator well tell me that he feels he's a Democrat in his heart, someone who was born during the Depression, grew up with a picture of FDR in his family's household, and that's where he's coming from. The only problem with that is the Democratic Party is not the party of Manchin's father or even his contemporaries. So the answer is just stay tuned.
You know, the White House has been trying to put spin on all of the problems they're having, and I thought one of the better ones this week was when they said, "We saved Christmas." I'm not sure what they saved Christmas from, because they certainly didn't save Christmas dinner from higher prices.
Well, Rick, this is what the talk show hosts and the punditocracy are claiming. White House Press Secretary Jen Psaki did say earlier that because Christmas presents and cards are arriving on time, and I quote, "we saved Christmas," and she added that this was a positive response to the president's agenda. Wow, did that fuel the chattering classes? Katie Pavlich, co-host of The Five, said the administration claimed there wasn't a supply chain crisis, and now they're claiming victory for eliminating the supply chain crisis. She also pointed out that natural gas bills are up by 40%, and one can't fill up their cars to go Christmas shopping. So, again, this statement spawned a lot of counterstatements, and in a time of inflation, the highest in more than three decades, making a claim about saving Christmas casts a lot of doubt on just what's in the stocking.
Vice President Harris has been trying to improve her poll numbers and has been doing a lot in the media recently, but it hasn't been doing a lot to help her poll numbers. How about the statement that they didn't see the Omicron variant coming?
They didn't see the previous variant coming. And of course, when one says statements like this without checking facts, one finds the administration in conflict with the president's own favorite face for fighting COVID, Dr. Fauci. Fauci did indeed say that they saw this coming and urge preparation for it. The vice president flatly contradicted Dr. Fauci. I would point out that Kamala Harris has not had a good year, and if there's any big losers this year, it's the beep. She recently claimed that she gets bad press, and most recently about the high staff turnover she's had. And this is in contrast to her 48 predecessors, all of whom were white and male. Well, once again, this is fake news. It just isn't so. Vice presidents historically have been on the receiving end of jokes, if not outright ridicule. Henry Wallace, FDR's vice president during World War II, was considered someone who was very cordial to communism under Stalin, and he corresponded with a guru in the Middle East, leading to folks saying he was a mystic. Democrats dumped him from the ticket in favor of Harry Truman in 1944. More recently, we've seen the case of Dan Quayle, a perfectly qualified two-term senator who became the third youngest vice president in history at age 42. But the media took a dislike to him, and because of some things that he said, including misspelling potato, he was ridiculed as less than intelligent and not up to the job of being president. Overall, the vice presidency has been, more often than not, something that people did not take that seriously. If Kamala Harris knew anything about show tunes or showbiz, she would just tune in to the classic drama of the I Sing about a president and vice president, and the vice president could simply get neither respect nor attention. His name was Throttlebottom. And I would just say that in making the comment she did, this vice president was throttle-bottomed.
John, you were on Newsmax TV yesterday afternoon talking about the reports that staff members are now leaving the White House. And we've seen the reports of so many of the key people in the Kamala Harris communications staff leaving her office, not even a year into the administration. What are you hearing out of the White House?
Rick, you're just scratching the surface. The Kamala Harris exodus is just a sneak preview, sources say, of what to expect in the executive office of the president. Now, Joe Biden has had a pretty good year overall. He has not had much staff turnover. But recent reports of grumbling and of what George W. Bush used to call burnout when his own staff turned in resignations is being heard once again. It's widely expected that around January 20th or the following week, a number of staffers within the president's office are going to turn in their resignations. In addition, there's speculation that at least one cabinet member, Secretary of Labor Marty Walsh, will also leave Washington, D.C. Walsh is expected to run for the Democratic nomination for governor of Massachusetts. And we already know that Press Secretary Jen Psaki is going to leave to spend more time with her family. Her deputy, who filled in for Jen during her bout with COVID, is Corinne Jean-Pierre, and she is likely to become press secretary. Overall, the changes are in the making, and we'll hear about them sooner rather than later.
couple of more Democrats are not going to run for re-election in 2022. Plus, we'll get John Gizzi's Christmas story for us. That's coming up next. But first, we're off to the WMAL Traffic Center, and Michelle Murray is there this morning.
In Calverton, you will still find accident activity eastbound on the Intercounty Connector at 95 along the left side of the roadway, so steady right, use caution there. Earlier accident to Manassas on 28 northbound at Sudley Road cleared away. And in Ellicott City, the vehicle fire cleared on westbound 70 near the Baltimore National Pike, and all lanes have been reopened. Right now, everything looks to be in good shape right now if you're traveling along the Capitol Beltway throughout Maryland and Virginia. In Roslyn, keep in mind that the ramp from northbound Lynn Street to the northbound GW Parkway is still closed due to a signal light outage. Now from GarageStoryPair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
As we move through our Christmas Day, mostly cloudy skies, can't rule out a chance for a few showers. Dot radar not going to amount to a whole lot with temperatures that will be in the 60s. Winds will be from the southwest at 10 to 15, will likely gust upwards of 20 miles per hour. Partly cloudy for the overnight, dropping out of the 30s. Tomorrow, mostly sunny and breezy. A little bit cooler, middle to upper 50s to around 60. Cooler yet for the day on Monday, with daytime highs only in the upper 40s. I'm 7 News meteorologist Steve Rudin, the Stormwatch 7 Weather Center.
We're at 49 degrees in the nation's capital, 719 on the Saturday morning update, and a very Merry Christmas. The Saturday morning update continues. I'm Rick Fowler. Merry Christmas. John Gizzi's with us right now. He is the White House correspondent, chief political columnist at Newsmax.com. So we've talked about the vice president's office. We've talked about the White House. What about Democrats who won't be running again? As of your headline Monday, it was number 21 and 22, not running again in 2022.
I hate to correct such a beautiful verse, Rick, but it's 23 now. That's right. Lucille Roybal-Allard, Democrat of California, became the 23rd Democrat to say, I'm out of here. Now, she's an important figure. She's the daughter of Ed Roybal, the first Latino House member from California, and she herself was the first woman in Congress who happened to be Hispanic. In any event, she's out, and that 23 number is important. It is the highest number of Democrats leaving the House of Representatives in 30 years. Back in 1991 and 92, 40 Democrats took a hike, either retiring or seeking another office. And this was helped in large part by the House banking scandal, in which many members clearly abused the overdraft privileges of the House bank, which was later abolished. These days, there's no scandal like that to encourage members to go. But there are low poll numbers for the Democratic Party and the president. That apparently is what pushed the number up to 23.
You and I email each other, of course, before we do our segment, and I had said to you, if there were a political story that related to Christmas that might be one of your favorites, what would it be?
Well, I have to go back 53 years. That was 1968, a year of turbulence in politics, of fighting and death overseas, of cultural clashes between left and right. And overall, not a pleasant year to remember. As Christmas approached, people were actually saying, how could it get any worse? Well, it didn't get worse. It got better. And that's when the Apollo 8 astronauts orbited the moon and then orbited the Earth no less than 10 times that year. Frank Borman, James Lovell, and William Anders were the first humans to witness and photograph an Earthrise, all from outer space. And in the end, as Christmas Eve approached, astronaut Borman read and was joined by his crewmates the first 10 verses from the book of Genesis. At the time, the broadcast was the most watched TV program ever. And Americans all over the country stopped and paused and smiled in most cases. There were a few dissenters. The late atheist Madeline Murray O'Hare filed a lawsuit afterwards. But most Americans didn't care. They were delighted about this, and their hearts were moved by the astronauts. And in the end, a stranger sent a telegram to all of them saying, Thank you for saving 1968.
John, those are very moving words. And I want to wish you and Colleen a very Merry Christmas. Thank you for all the time you spent with us, all of the insight and wisdom that you have imparted in 2021. And we look forward to the excitement and fireworks in 2022.
Well, I couldn't say it better on this night than Frank Borman did. A Merry Christmas and God bless all of you on the good earth.
Thank you, John. 7:23, it's the Saturday Morning Update on WMAL. 7:28, it's the Saturday Morning Update, and a Merry Christmas to you. I'm Rick Fowler, glad that you have joined us this morning. And a couple of notes here in the news. You may have heard that U.S. Airlines canceled hundreds of flights last night and yesterday, and much of that blamed by the surge in COVID-19 infections driven by the Omicron variant. United Airlines and Delta Airlines both canceling dozens of flights. United 177 flight cancellations, Delta's 150. And as an example of how the new COVID-19 variant is impacting America's plans, just one example here, an accountant from Long Beach, Mississippi, flew to New York with his wife and three children. The reason they went to New York was to see the Broadway play Hamilton. Hamilton was one of a dozen Broadway shows forced to cancel shows this week when cast and crew members tested positive for COVID-19. It is 7:30. Maria Leaf has the news next. We'll be back with Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer, and also we'll check in with Gordon Chang this morning. So do stay with us on the Saturday Morning Update.
WMAL-FM, Woodbridge, Washington. The one radio station for you to depend on. All day, every day. 105.9 FM, WMAL. A Cumulus Media station. News now.
WMAL News at 7:30. Merry Christmas. I'm Maria Leaf.
Maico, nel cuore della notte, il segno di speranza.
Pope Francis giving his Christmas Day message in Rome, in which he says only dialogue between people and countries can help solve the world's biggest problems. The Pope highlighted several conflicts, including tensions or crises in Syria, Yemen, Israel, the Palestinian territories, and Afghanistan. Vice President Kamala Harris's office says she has tested negative for the coronavirus after having close contact earlier this week with an aide who later tested positive. She tested negative on Wednesday after being told of the AIDS breakthrough infection. Harris was tested again yesterday, and her office said a pair of tests found no trace of the virus, and she'll be tested again on Monday. Right now, she and her husband spending the holiday at home in Los Angeles. WMAL Sports, two NFL games today. Cleveland and Green Bay at 4:30. Indianapolis and Arizona at 8:15. WMAL Traffic and Weather next. WMAL Traffic and Weather. Here's Michelle Murray in the Hadid Carpet Cleaning Traffic Center.
In Calverton, you will still find accident activity eastbound on the Intercounty Connector at 95 in the two left lanes. And it is not causing any significant delays, but use caution there. Earlier vehicle fire westbound on 70 near the Baltimore National Pike in Ellicott City cleared. All lanes have been reopened there. So far, everything is moving well right now if you're traveling along the Capitol Beltway throughout Maryland and Virginia. And in Virginia, traffic is moving well so far, headed on 95 from Dumfries in towards Springfield. Now from GarageDoorRepair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
As we move through our Christmas Day, mostly cloudy skies. Can't rule out a chance for a few showers. That radar not going to amount to a whole lot with temperatures that will be in the 60s. Winds will be from the southwest at 10 to 15, will likely gust upwards of 20 miles per hour. Partly cloudy for the overnight, dropping out of the 30s. Tomorrow, mostly sunny and breezy. A little bit cooler, middle to upper 50s to around 60. Cooler yet for the day on Monday, with daytime highs only in the upper 40s. I'm 7 News meteorologist Steve Root in the Stormwatch 7 Weather Center.
It's 50 in Bethesda, 54 at Reagan National. I'm Maria Leaf on Washington's Mall, WMAL.
Yes, indeed. It is a Merry Christmas to you, and it's great to have you with us on the Saturday Morning Update for Christmas morning, 7:36. We're joined by Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer. He is the president of the London Center for Policy Research. He is the author of Operation Dark Heart. And a very Merry Christmas to you, Tony.
Merry Christmas, and always great to join you, Rick, so thanks for having me.
Well, thanks for taking a little time out from the family on an early Christmas morning. Wanted to talk to you about some of the things going on in national security and the military, and also wanted to get a Christmas anecdote from you in terms of the military as well. But I want to start with China, because we've just seen the tensions seem to be ratcheting up, and there's a story out that the Chinese foreign minister says that China will not fear confrontation with the U.S., and it's very troubling because they just seem to be more belligerent, whereas our administration is saying that we're sort of business competitors.
So that's the problem. We have areas of disagreement which are obvious. The COVID origins, which, just saying, I think we all know where it came from. The trade issue, as you mentioned, kind of the business relationship. Human rights, which is no small issue. I mean, I've never seen people bending over, both parties, by the way, I'm not going to single out the Democrats on this, bending over backwards to ignore the Uyghurs and all of the issues relating to slave labor. You know, I always look around and I'm amazed at how many people walk around with Apple products, just saying. And the continued and expanded pressure on Taiwan regarding the fact that they feel that the PRC, the People's Republic of China, feel that they should have Taiwan, which is the Republic of China, as part of their organic governmental control. So you put those issues together, you have a group, the West, who have been less than, I think, effective in the way they've been dealing with it. And the most obvious and an effective person is Joe Biden and the administration, which has been confronted by all this. And so even though they've had recently, just a few days ago, Biden had a 3-hour talk, which it would have been interesting to be a fly on the wall for that, with the Chinese, and it didn't go well. You know, basically the Chinese are not taking anything Biden says seriously, and one of the most serious things we've already spoken about is the fact that they're not really going to do anything to push back on Beijing hosting the Olympics coming up. So when you have this continued kind of just, you know, appeasement, you know, happy talk, as my friend Catherine Herridge always calls it, you know, just kind of talking happily about everything, thinking somehow it's going to have an effect. It's just not having any real effect on the Chinese from being more and more aggressive.
I want to turn to Russia, but real quick, where do you see China in terms of Russia and our position? In other words, you've got China and Russia kind of versus the U.S.?
So it's interesting that I've got this question several times, like, are the Russians and Chinese coordinating? It's like, no, they don't coordinate, but they do watch each other. And I think this is going to be one of the important things that China is going to be very much focused on, is what happens in Ukraine. It's all related. So while they don't work together, I think if either can gain advantage by something the other does, that is to say, if China does something provocative and Russia sees an opportunity, they're going to take it. I think the Chinese are going to be looking at some things they can do in the spring should Putin do something within the next 30 days regarding Ukraine. So it's all related.
And as we look at Russia, there are more satellite images out this week indicating that there is an even increased Russian troop buildup on the Ukraine border. Vladimir Putin, and he's got quite a lock on Europe with something they want that he has.
Right. It's called energy. And the one thing that Putin has been very effective in is increasing the market for Russian gas, natural gas especially. And as you know, it's winter, and whenever it's winter, you depend on being warm by essentially a form of fossil fuel, which is a natural gas. So Putin has been super good in getting pretty much most of Western Europe, especially Germany, tied to Russian energy. And I think that's the one lever that Putin is more than happy to remind them of in this time of great concern regarding what he's going to do. And I think Putin has made it very clear, and I think he's doing this in a number of ways. And this is why, Rick, I find it interesting the U.S. media doesn't really even cover this. Putin's kind of menacing Europe right now. He's not hiding the fact that, hey, I'm going to do something in Ukraine. As you point out, he's building up. NATO can see all of this. And yet he's banking on the fact that if he does something, I don't think Germany's going to take the chance of having Putin shut off their gas in the middle of winter, just saying. So I think it's another reason that I think Putin's probably going to plan to go right in the middle of winter, because not only are his troops been training in Arctic conditions, and I think they're very effective cold weather fighters, Europe's not going to want its energy cut off. Its people will never stand for freezing in the middle of winter. So I think he's banking on that.
And what about his demands on NATO and as that relates to President Biden?
So, yeah, so one of the things that's been definitely contended is the issue, and one of the things he's demanding, Putin is demanding, a guarantee that the United States and NATO will not expand or not continuous expansion. Now, this has been an issue for a while. Even Mikhail Gorbachev commented yesterday in the media, or at least I read the article yesterday in the media, where he feels that we broke our word to him and to the Soviet Union when it disbanded to become the Russian Republic, that NATO would not become an aggressor. And the Russian feeling, if you look at it from their perspective, the NATO countries which have joined NATO are closer and closer to the borders of the now Russian Republic. That's a big issue. And I think that's what Putin has been telegraphing, not only a return to empire, he wants the old Soviet Union back. There's been a paranoia within the Russians for their entire history of wanting to have essentially buffer states, buffer countries, to preserve their security. So the feeling is, and Putin has said this, that he wants, you know, some level of guarantee from the United States regarding not expanding into Ukraine. That's something the United States has not been willing to actually give him at this point. So,
all right. Want to turn to another kind of troubling area that we need to get into, and that is, where is the U.S. military at the end of the first year of the Biden administration versus where we were at the end of the Trump administration?
It's a great question. I was just talking to one of my friends about this yesterday. We have today, Rick, the most expensive military ever. But the grand irony is, from talking to folks inside of it right now, it's not anywhere near being the most effective military we've ever had. The layers of bureaucracy, I was talking to one of the guys who works in Navy programs, and just trying to get anything done becomes a bureaucratic nightmare. You combine that with this wokeness, which I think has completely infiltrated the military at all levels. I don't think we understand fully how badly that's compromised our ability to conduct military operations. I think we're going to find out the hard way how bad it is. And it's gone from meritocracy, where the merits of your actions and abilities are those things which drive your career, to, hey, are you the right color skin? Or have you addressed this transgender issue? Yeah, it's very dangerous. And I think the malaise of woke is not something we fully understand. So we're going to learn, I think, a very hard lesson, that we can have the most expensive military in the world, and yet because of a failure of leadership, and that's what it comes down to, we're going to have real issues should we have to conduct real military operations within the next few years.
Do you get a sense that at the maybe lower upper level of the military, that it's less political? I mean, sort of where is this direction? Obviously, you've got the White House and you've got the Secretary of Defense, but at what level does it not really become political, if you understand?
I don't think there's any level at this point. No, I think there used to be a time when you had an element of professionals who were kind of immune from it, but I think at this point, from what I'm hearing, it's everywhere and pervasive. I mean, I know people who are still on the inside, still serving, trying their best to focus on being effective. They're not going to get promoted to general. because they're not willing to do and say those politically correct things that are required for you to be considered senior material. So I think there are elements, small elements of excellence, which are trying their best to focus on what they need to do to keep the country protected. Most people are now focused on wearing high heels, you know, having officers wear high heels just so they know what the experience is. So it's a very dangerous time.
I want to turn to Christmas, being Christmas morning, and you served in the military. Being in the military and often being overseas, your reflections and just how it is for military families and those servicemen and women who are not at home this morning.
Well, God bless them for standing the watch. I think many of us, Rick, I'm going to tell on myself here. I joined in 1981 during the Cold War, and some of the folks listening to this morning, probably Ed Meese, that's probably listening, he always does. I've always told the Reagan folks to their face how much I appreciate their getting us through the Cold War, because one of the things that I figured joining up in 81 was that I would end up probably not surviving the Cold War, because we all figured something would happen with the Russians, the Soviets. So God bless the Reagan folks for getting us through that. But I think more importantly, when you talk about Christmas, about the idea of service, I know myself and others have had to go and serve in some very bleak places, to be on some very long flights to go stand the watch and do things. And we've had generation after generation willing to do the hard work of protecting not only the United States, but the world. And I don't say this to be put forward the idea that we're an imperial power, but I think we've done our best to be a power that allows for other nations to survive and thrive. And the men and women of the United States military have been that force that goes out and does those hard things. And I pray to God that he give everyone the courage to continue to serve. And for those of us who are still around trying to help out, will give us the wisdom to help do the right thing to keep everybody safe this Christmas and every other Christmas to preserve the Republic.
Well, again, a shout out to those military families who are here in the Washington area and they have a loved one who is overseas or another area of the country in service. And I can't say it enough. Over the years, we take it for granted. You know, we don't often think about it until maybe.
It's invisible.
You know, maybe Memorial Day or Veterans Day, and then we go on about our lives again, and we don't think about it. So our thoughts are with you this morning, wherever you may be, listening to WMAL. If you have a loved one in the military or in the military yourself, we so appreciate your service for keeping us safe and free on a Christmas morning.
Amen.
Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer, the host of the Thought to Action podcast, and we're going to be talking to Gordon Chang next, and I know you have him quite often on your podcast.
We just had him recently, yes. Gordon's one of our senior fellows and basically the most brilliant man I know on China, so you picked a good guy to talk to.
Oh, yeah, and one thing I wanted to ask you about, people that have some downtime over the holiday and they like to listen to different podcasts, if they went to your site, londoncenter.org, and they looked up Thought to Action, any particular episode you might say, hey, this is a must-listen to?
No, check us out. Look, we've had Scott Perry, Congressman Perry, the new chair of the Liberty Caucus, talking to things about us regarding protecting women. To Andy Biggs talking about China. So, look, we've got a spectrum of things. I think people will enjoy it, especially our Ask Us Anything, where we actually answer questions. Imagine that. We actually answer questions that subscribers and fans write into us about. So I think people would enjoy just watching and spending some time on our website, londoncenter.org.
Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer, thank you so much. Have a very Merry Christmas with the family.
You too, Rick. Merry Christmas to all of you and the crew there, too. For God bless them for hanging in there with you.
All right, Jeff and Jane, you bet.
That's right.
Thank you, Tony. It's 7:50. It is the Saturday Morning Update on WMAL. Michelle Murray is in the WMAL Traffic Center this morning.
You will still find accident activity right now on the eastbound lanes of the Intercounty Connector at 95, where the two left lanes remain blocked. Overall, the Beltway is in good shape with no delays throughout Maryland and Virginia. Now, there is a report of a disabled vehicle on the inner loop near the Eisenhower Avenue connector, but it is confined to the right shoulder, so that is not really causing much of a delay. Traveling on 95 in Virginia, so far everything is moving well, headed from Stafford County all the way in towards Springfield. Now from GarageDoorRepair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
As we move through our Christmas day, mostly cloudy skies. Can't rule out a chance for a few showers. Dot radar not going to amount to a whole lot with temperatures that will be in the 60s. Winds will be from the southwest at 10 to 15, will likely gust upwards of 20 miles per hour. Partly cloudy for the overnight, dropping out of the 30s. Tomorrow, mostly sunny and breezy. A little bit cooler, middle to upper 50s to around 60. Cooler yet for the day on Monday, with daytime highs only in the upper 40s. I'm 7 News meteorologist Steve Rudin, the Stormwatch 7 Weather Center.
50 degrees in the nation's capital, 752 on the Saturday morning update, and Merry Christmas.
Washington's Mall, WMAL, where Washington comes to talk.
It's the Saturday morning update on WMAL. We wish you a very Merry Christmas, and we welcome Gordon Chang to the show. And Gordon, of course, is the author of The Coming Collapse of China, and we follow him on Twitter at Gordon G. Chang. And it's great to have you with us this morning on Christmas, Gordon.
Merry Christmas, Rick, and thank you so much.
Merry Christmas to you. President Biden signed a bill into law on Thursday, the Uyghur Forced Labor Prevention Act. It is to block imports from the region unless businesses can prove the items were made without forced labor. There was hesitation from the White House, corporate opposition, but it won passage in the House, followed by the Senate. What kind of impact will this have? Is it really going to make any difference?
Rick, it could make a great difference if it's enforced. The big question, though, is whether the Biden administration will put enforcement efforts into it. Now, at the end of the Trump years and the beginning of the Biden years, there was actually good enforcement of our laws against the importation of goods made with forced or slave labor. But we know that there's been a lot of corporate pressure on the White House, and clearly it responded, because Biden didn't come out with his support for the bill until it was clear it was going to pass with overwhelming majorities. Matter of fact, in the House and the Senate, 535 people, only one person voted against it.
What does this mean for American corporations like Apple? I know Intel got into a little bit of controversy over this week.
Well, Apple has been using a subcontractor, Lens Technology, which is a user of forced labor on a massive scale. And Apple was one of the companies that was actually leading the charge against this bill. Now, Apple is going to have to do some rejiggering of its supply chain, as will all companies, because really what this bill does is it shifts the presumption. You know, in the past, before this bill, goods could be blocked from importation if someone could prove that they were made with forced or slave labor. What this does is it just turns the presumption the other way, and you now got to prove that it wasn't made with forced or slave labor. So this is going to require, I think, companies to reexamine their supply chains, and it's also going to require, I think, the Biden administration to be more forceful and more vigorous, because there's a lot of public pressure now on this issue, and that's a good thing.
If you were to contrast where we are in terms of our position versus China and our relations with China, where we are today, almost a year into the Biden administration, with where we were at the end of the Trump administration, how much of a difference?
There has been not much of a difference, in a sense. But we should be much further along than when we are, because we're a year down the road, and there's been another year of Chinese provocation and belligerence. So the Trump team actually was pretty good on China, especially towards its last year. And that momentum should have been carried forward into the Biden years. So we haven't seen too much backsliding, though there's been some. But we should be much further along, because it's much clearer now to the American public that China is an existential threat to the United States. So the bottom line is the Biden team really it has an inadequate response given the nature of China's challenge to the U.S.
So we have a Washington audience that has people on Capitol Hill. It has people in the administration, the government relations offices of major corporations. What would you say to those audiences as to how we should address this growing belligerence from China in 2022?
We should address the growing belligerence in the context in which China puts it. You know, the president talks about China as being a competitor, but the Chinese talk about us as an enemy. And we have to understand that this is what we see is really unrestricted warfare, as the Chinese military talks about it. China intends to overthrow our country. They've made that very clear with what they have done and what they say about us. So I think that we have to start listening to what Beijing is saying about the United States.
With the amount of Chinese technology that is just interwoven in virtually everything in America, from your smart TV to your smartphone to your computers, is there a sort of an underlying threat that maybe we're not paying as much attention to as we should?
Well, there certainly is a threat we're not paying as much attention to as we should, because we have heard the Chinese talk about stopping the flow of goods to the United States if we were to do this or to do that. And so we've got to, I think, get the Chinese factories out of our supply chain, which means going to countries like Vietnam, India, back to the United States. And there's one other thing, and that is we have a lot of pressure on our southern border because of the caravans. Those caravans exist because the Central America has been devastated by factories moving out of those countries to Asia. So if we were to, for instance, change our free trade agreement with the Central America, we could bring those factories back. We could ensure our supply chain, which is where this discussion started, and we would be much better off.
Gordon Chang, author of The Coming Collapse of China, thank you so much for being with us on this Christmas weekend, and we will look forward to seeing you on both Newsmax and Fox News over the weekend. And a Merry, Merry Christmas to you and Lydia. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Rick, and Merry, Merry Christmas, and a safe and happy holiday season.
Well, we want to wish you a very Merry Christmas. Thank you so much for being with us throughout the year here on the Saturday Morning Update. Get a number of emails and appreciate the communication and your feedback and the things you like on the show, and every once in a while the things you don't like on the show. So thank you so much for listening. Very much appreciated. A big, 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 big thanks to Jeff Wolf and Jane Houtenin for being here every Saturday morning. Maria Leaf is here quite often along with Heather Curtis, and we appreciate their participation and support throughout the year and part of the Saturday Morning Update. And to you listening this morning, a very Merry Christmas. Thank you so much for being with us and looking forward to a great 2022 with you.
WMAL-FM, Woodbridge, Washington. The one radio station for you to depend on. All day, every day. 105.9 FM, WMAL, a Cumulus Media station.